We were reading yesterday how the residents of Jambadvipa, the nine varshas, the nine divisions of Jambadvipa, were offering their prayers. We began with the prayers of Lord Shiva in Ilavritta Varsh. His prayers are to Lord Shankarshan. Lord Shiva is empowered with the potency to destroy by Lord Shankarshan. And because he is associating somewhat with the mode of ignorance, he is known as tamasic. And what happens when one is ignorant? One gets angry. And that anger is used by Lord Shiva, by the Lord, to destroy the universe. So that's going to be spoken of, because the only purpose of anger is destruction. And anger, again, is born of the mode of ignorance. But ultimately, Rajaguna is the mood bhava, is born of passion. And when passion, desire, is not satisfied, it gives birth to anger. So here's Lord Shiva's prayers. We began hearing them yesterday. I'll go over some of what we read. The most powerful Lord Shiva said, "O Supreme Personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you in your expansion as Lord Shankarshan. You are the reservoir of all transcendental qualities. Although you are unlimited, you remain unmanifest to the non-devotees." So you have qualities, and not only are they finite, they are unlimited qualities. There are unlimited numbers of qualities, and they are expanded. The Lord has unlimited, he has those qualities expanded to an unlimited degree. But yet, you remain unmanifest to the non-devotees, because only devotees evoke in Krishna yeh tamam prapadyante tamastitaiva bhajam yamam yaham. Only the devotees evoke in Krishna the desire to reveal those qualities, to allow a person to see them. So the devotee, by Krishna's mercy, can understand Krishna's qualities, while the non-devotee, even if they saw Krishna, they would not understand his glories at all. Because why? Because of mundane consciousness. But it's not really just because of the mundane consciousness why they can't understand Krishna. It is because of their mundane consciousness that Krishna doesn't reveal himself to them. And a devotee, on the other hand, because of his Krishna consciousness, his bhakti, Krishna desires to allow the devotee to see him, at least to some degree, because no one can understand Krishna fully, because he is the Supreme Lord. No one can understand him completely. So Krishna has unlimited qualities. The devotees can understand something of them, the non-devotees cannot. Oh my Lord, you are the only worshipable person. For you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the reservoir of all opulences. What does it mean that Krishna is the reservoir of all opulence? Where we turn on the tap, the water tap, and the water comes from the tap. So we think, what a wonderful creation this tap is. All you do is turn the little handle, the knob, and water comes out. But actually, so much arrangement, so many things have gone into making that simple turning on the tap effective in bringing out water. And ultimately, the water will come from the reservoir. Of course, even more ultimately than that, it comes from the rain, from the clouds, from the evaporation, from the ocean, like that. But for the purpose of this example, the water comes from the reservoir. That means that a little bit of water, a few drops, a few gallons, a few liters, excuse me. They come out of, they're coming out of one tap, but the reservoir has practically an unlimited amount of water. So similarly, whatever quality someone in this world has in a few drops, Krishna has an unlimited quantity of that quality to the most fine degree. So you are the only, so therefore, because he's so, Krishna is so glorious, because he's the reservoir of all the, of opulences, he is so glorious, and because he's the sum total of all glory, he is the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And one of his glories is power. And another of his glories is bhaktivatsa. What does bhaktivatsa mean? And he cares for his devotees. So he's all powerful and he cares for his devotees. He protects his devotees. These are just some of his qualities. But yet, if one is in danger, that quality of being all powerful and tending to give protection to all who surrender to him, this is a very important quality for us if we're in danger and take shelter of him. And Lord Shiva is speaking this, and he's in charge of destruction, which ultimately puts everyone in danger. The body will be destroyed. Ultimately, the material world will be destroyed. So it's a dangerous place. Padam, padam, yad vivadam, natesham. So what to do about this danger? Your secure lotus feet are the only source of protection for all your devotees, whom you satisfy by manifesting yourself in various forms. He also manifests himself to non-devotees. He comes in what form for non-devotees? Because God is one who cannot be denied. So he comes, as Swami Bhandaprabhu said, it's death for non-devotees. You cannot deny, I don't believe in death. Oh my Lord, you deliver your devotees from the clutches of material existence. That's such a great phrase, the clutches of material existence. What do you think of? What picture comes to your mind when you hear the word clutches, within the clutches of something? What?
It's all very green. Mm. Big shark with his mouth out there.
Yeah. Oh, what other images? Yes, that's the one that I think of, a bird. You're in its clutches, its claws have you. You can't escape, that's the point. So the clutches of material existence are impossible to escape from. But Krishna is the deliverer, mrityu samsara vartmani. He is the mrityu samsara sagara. He is the deliverer from the ocean of death. And we are actually caught, we are now in the ocean of death. And the great, now if we use the analogy from the previous chapter, what was death? Who remembers? It was the great elephant. Remember that? No. it was a great elephant, but if we're using someone is in the ocean of death, and then the great elephant comes, it won't work. So the shark of death will come at some point or another. So you deliver your devotees from the clutches of material existence, from the shark of death, the shark of sure death. Non-devotees, so if Krishna delivers his devotees, non-devotees, however, what happens to non-devotees? They remain entangled in material existence by your will. Kindly accept me as your eternal servant. So it's not exactly by Krishna's will. It is by the will of the living entity that he's in the material world, by his desire to enjoy the material world. But then once in the material world, Daivyesha Gunamayi, because the material energy is Daivi, empowered by Krishna, by Krishna's willing, then no one can escape. So therefore, Lord Shiva is praying, kindly accept me as your eternal servant. So these prayers of Lord Shiva will tell us one by one of Krishna's power, Krishna's opulence, Krishna's potency. Why? So we can surrender to Krishna. And that is what Lord Shiva is going to advise. Please, you surrender to the Lord. He will save you. He has power. He has unlimited opulence, His glories. He will save you from the clutches of material existence. He continues, we cannot control the force of our anger. Therefore, when we look at material things, we cannot avoid feeling attraction or repulsion for them. This is the power of the material energy. You can't avoid these things. You look at material things, become attracted. Jayato visaya pung san sangas techo bajayate, become attracted. And then if you get what you want, greed develops. And if you don't get you want, anger develops. But the Supreme Lord, very different from ourselves, is never affected in this way. Although He glances over the material world for the purpose of creating, maintaining, and destroying it, He is not affected, even to the slightest degree. So we, Dayato Vishaya Pungsan, when we look at something, with our glance we become attracted or repulsed. But when Krishna glances at the material world, He is not affected in any way, not even to the slightest degree by it. There is no attraction or repulsion. It's under His control completely. He is not under the control of material energy. Therefore, because Krishna is not under the control of the material energy, one who desires to conquer the force of the senses must take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. So to get out of death's clutches, take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. To conquer the senses, take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Then he will be victorious. Text 20. For persons with impure vision, the Supreme Lord's eyes appear like those of someone who indiscriminately drinks intoxicating beverages. So what color are they? Reddish. Copper reddish. So to those in Maya, one will think, what is this? He has reddish eyes? He's been drinking? But thus bewildered, such unintelligent persons become angry at the Supreme Lord. They don't understand Krishna and become angry. Not because of the color of his eyes, but they become angry. Why? Why do people become angry at God? They don't get their way. And someone else seems to get their way. And we don't get what we want, and someone else gets what we want. Something happens that we don't like, that we hate, the worst thing we could have imagined happens. We become angry at him. And then what is the result of our anger towards God, which springs from our lack of acceptance of him as the Supreme Lord? Due to their angry mood, the Lord himself appears angry and fearful. Atmavan manyate jagat. Depending upon our consciousness, we see the world. So when we are angry at Krishna, Krishna appears angry and fearful to us. When we love Krishna, Krishna appears so beautiful to us. Like in Raso Vaisa, when Krishna entered the arena of Kamsa to wrestle, all the different individuals, according to their own mood, saw him in different ways. The wrestlers saw him as death personified. The young ladies of Mathura saw him as the most beautiful. Just completely different moods. The yogis saw him as the Paramatma. So when we see something in this material world, what we are seeing is what? Our own consciousness, actually. Quite amazing how the material world works. However, seeing the Lord angry and fearful, this is an illusion. When the wives of the serpent demons were agitated by the touch of the Lord's lotus feet due to shyness, they could proceed no further in their worship of him. Yet the Lord remained unagitated by their touch, for is equipoised in all circumstances. Therefore, who will not worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Because in the previous verse, it said how he glances at the material nature, and he is unagitated, not disturbed even to the slightest degree, even though when we glance at material nature, attraction and aversion develop. So here's an example of that. Talking about Shankarshan. I think that's from the third canto, I think. Prabhupada's purport. Anyone who remains unagitated, even in the presence of the cause of agitation, is called dhira, or equipoised. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, being always in a transcendental position, is never agitated by anything. Therefore, someone who wants to become dhira must take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. In Bhagavad Gita 2.13, Krishna says, Dhiras tatiranamuyate, a person who is equipoised in all circumstances is never bewildered. So if one takes shelter of someone who is powerful, one's own lack of power is removed. And one, yes. So similarly, if one takes shelter of someone who is unagitated, undisturbed, then he becomes undisturbed. If one takes shelter of someone who is fearless and powerful, he becomes fearless and powerful. So these are the secrets that Lord Shiva is explaining. So who will not worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Look at his potency. Become a devotee, Lord Shiva is recommending. Worship him. Just see who he is. Text 21. Lord Shiva continued, all the great sages accept the Lord as the source of creation, maintenance, and destruction. Just look up at the sky some night and see the planets. Look how huge this planet is. Look at the potency of the sun, the moon. Look at the amazing creations. And who has done all this? Just by chance? Suddenly popped out, a wombat pops out or something like that by chance. Highly unlikely, because if wombats at one time popped out by chance, one would expect they would just appear every now and then, just by chance. But never it happens. So there is a creator behind this organized universe. And it is maintained, not only created, but it is maintained. And not only is created and maintained, it is destroyed. So under whose will? Maya dakshena prakriti siyate sacharacharan. Under whose will does this all go on? And what an amazing personality who has all these potent qualities the Supreme Lord is. Although he actually has nothing to do with these activities at all of creation, maintenance, and destruction, it goes on by his energy. So all the sages accept the Lord as the source. Therefore, the Lord is called Ananta, or unlimited. Although the Lord in his incarnation as Shesha holds all the universes on his head, each universe feels no heavier than a mustard seed to him. Therefore, what person desiring perfection will not worship the Lord? So how unlimited is his strength and beauty and fame and wealth and knowledge and renunciation? So
So we should worship him. We shouldn't be so proud and think, oh, I don't need to worship anyone for help. I'll do everything on my own, by my own power. We'll be caught in the ocean of the clutches of the ocean of material existence, of death, mrityu, samsara, sagara. If we go it on our own, so we take shelter of this all-powerful person to get us out. So here's an example of the power of that person, a universe. Imagine if you'd have had a universe on your head. How tiring it would be, carrying around a universe. Obviously we'd get crushed in a second, less than a second. For Krishna, it's expansion. Anantadev Shesh. It feels like a mustard seed. A mustard seed is so teeny. And all the universes, the number of universes are compared to a big bag of mustard seed. So many. And yet we're so proud. Arrogant. So imagine how powerful this Lord is. 22:23. So therefore, who will not worship him? This is what Lord Shiva is telling us. We should worship him. From that body, Supreme Personality of Godhead, appears Lord Brahma, whose body is made from the total material energy. Lord Brahma, from that Supreme Personality of Godhead appears Lord Brahma, whose body is made from the total material energy. The reservoir of intelligence predominated by the passionate mode of material nature. From Lord Brahma, I myself am born as a representation of false ego known as Rudra. By my own power, I create all the other demigods, the five elements and the senses. Where does he get... So this is talking about Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, the most powerful of the demigods. They are all coming from that Lord, and they're getting their powers from him. Therefore, I worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is greater than any of us, and under whose control are situated all the demigods, the material elements and senses, and even Lord Brahma and I myself, like birds bound by a rope. What does it mean? What does it mean, like birds bound by a rope? We are doing so many things, but we are like birds bound by a rope. Yeah, but what would it mean that a bird is bound by a rope? But he's saying that we create all the... I do all this and do that, and Brahma does all this and all that. But yet we are like birds bound by a rope. What is the meaning of bound by a rope in this case?
Mind, independence, and parameters are limited.
Yeah.
So-called rope.
Yeah. So not rope, not bound exactly like this, but if his feet are bound by the rope, then he can fly, right? But how far can he fly? Well, that depends on how long the rope is. So though he has power to fly, that power to fly is determined by another. And depending upon how much rope he wants to give him, he can fly. So similarly, the demigods, Lord Shiva is saying, I can fly, I can create, I can create other demigods, I can create the elements, I can create false ego, the primary binding element around the soul in the material world. But really I am like a bird bound by the Lord. I can only do what he allows me to do. If he tightens the rope, shortens the rope, I can no longer fly. I can no longer do these things. So this is actually all our situation. We can do so many wonderful things. We can jump so high. We can sing so nicely. We can speak. We can play instruments, we can do this, we can... So many things we can do. But it is just, we are birds bound by the feet, and we are flying by the grace of Krishna only as far as he allows. In a second, he can take everything from us. In a second, he can give us more ability to serve him. Only by the Lord's grace can we create, maintain, and annihilate the material world. Therefore, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Lord. So again and again, speaking about the power of God, he comes back to the point of I surrender, I offer my obeisances. The illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead binds all of us conditioned souls to the material world. So it is his energy that keeps us here. Therefore, without being favored by him, persons like us cannot understand how to get out of that illusory energy. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Lord, who is the cause of creation and annihilation. So especially this point, we want to get out of the material energy, but we are not able to on our own. We can't understand how to get out on our own. We need Krishna's blessings to do that. So therefore, again, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto him. This is Lord Shiva's prayers. So again and again, allowing us to glimpse the power of Krishna by his words, even though he's the greatest of demigods, and therefore concluding, he's saying, I offer my obeisances, but what should we be thinking? The same thing. I offer my obeisances. We'll read some of Prabhupada's purport. Yeah. Prabhupada explains, attempting to become free from illusion by our own endeavor will keep us forever in illusion. We'll just get entangled in the material world. We're not able to escape. And how the material energy which is under the control of Krishna makes the universe work like a machine. Krishna, it is so powerful, Maya Dakshena, under Krishna's supervision. It's all working. From the second half of the purport. So he's the one who gets us out of illusion, out of Maya. So we have to somehow capture his favorable glance upon us. The Lord gives the living entity a particular type of mechanical body, and the living entity must work with it according to the laws of fruitive activities. Fruitive activities are described in this verse, karma pavanim mayam. The living entity is seated on a machine, the body, and according to the order of the Supreme Lord, he operates the machine. This is the secret of transmigration of the soul from one body to another. The living entity thus becomes entangled in fruitive activities in this material world. So it's all, the material energy is just like a big, big machine that's been designed and empowered by the Lord. That's the meaning of Daiviye Shagunamayi Mamamaya Dvatiya. The living entity thus becomes entangled in fruitive activities in this material world and then transmigrates. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, manashashtanindriyani prakritistani karshati. The living entity is struggling very hard against the six senses, which include the mind. This is all within the machinery of the material energy he's struggling. In all the activities of creation and annihilation, the living entity is entangled in fruitive activities, which are executed by the illusory energy. Maya. He is exactly like a computer handled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The so-called scientists say that nature acts independently, but they cannot explain what nature is. Nature is nothing but a machine operated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When one understands the operator, Krishna, who operates the machine, his problems of life are solved. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Bahunam Janamanante Gyanamamam Prapadyante Vasudeva Savamiti Samahatmasadolabha. After many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. A sane man, therefore, surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and thus gets out of the clutches of the illusory enemy, Maya. So that is what Lord Shiva is telling us. Thus, in the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 5th canto, 17th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Descent of the River Ganges. Now, continuing the prayers offered to the Lord by the residents of Jambudvip. So we heard Lord Shiva's prayers. Those were the first of the different predominators or the deities to the deities. The first prayers offered by great personalities in each of the different divisions of Varshas of Jambudvip. Now we'll go to the second. Text 1. The first six verses, which are the prayers of Bhadrasva. And this is in Bhadrasva Varsha. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, Bhadrasva, the son of Dhamaraj, rules the tract of land known as Bhadrasva Varsha. Just as Lord Shiva worships Shankarshan and Ilavritta Varsha, Bhadrasva, accompanied by his intimate servants and all the residents of the land, worships the plenary expansion of Vasudev known as Haya Shirsha. What does Shirsha mean? You know, if you ever did any yoga, what is Shirshasan? Shirshasan. When you stand on your head. Yeah. So Shirsha means head, and Haya means horse. So there's an incarnation of the Lord who had the head of a horse, Haya Griva, or Haya Shirsha. So they worship the expansion of, Bhadrasva worships the expansion of Lord Vasudeva's name known as Haya Shirsha. Lord Haya Shirsha is very dear to the devotees, and he is the director of all religious principles. Fixed in the topmost trance, Bhadrasva and his associates offer their respectful obeisances to the Lord and chant the following prayers with careful pronunciation. The ruler Bhadrasva and his intimate associates utter the following prayer. We offer our respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the reservoir of all religious principles, who cleanses the heart of the conditioned soul in this material world. Again and again we offer our respectful obeisances unto him. So in the last set of prayers, by whom? Lord Shiva. He was saying we offer our obeisances to the Lord because he is so great. So here he's going to explain how the Lord purifies. Because I may think, oh, my heart is so contaminated that I really can't become a devotee. What to do about that? But it is Krishna, as Bhadrasva says, who actually removes all the contamination from the heart. If our consciousness is correct. So he, the reservoir of all religious principle, he cleanses the heart of the conditioned soul in this material world, and therefore he offers obeisances to him again and again. Prabhupada explains purification is the aim of human life. Do we think of that? Do we think like that? We want to purify the heart. Chaito darpana marjanam, cleansing the heart of all the dust, the dirt, reactions, desires, unwanted things. This life is not meant for blind indulgence in sense gratification. In the human form, the living being must engage himself in Krishna consciousness to purify his existence. Tapo divyam putrakayena satvam shudye Rishabdev Maharaj. This is the instruction of King Rishabdev to his sons, that human life is meant to cleanse the heart. Yasmad brahma sokyam tvanantam. We are all seeking happiness, but because of our ignorance and foolishness, we cannot know what unobstructed happiness really is. Unobstructed happiness is called Brahma-sokya, spiritual happiness. Although we may get some so-called happiness in this material world, that happiness is temporary. The foolish materialist cannot understand this. So we want to purify our hearts so we can gain something higher. That is the purpose of human life. So we may think, well, anyway, I don't want something higher. I just want to stay here and have a good time. That's how most people think. They don't think that life is the rare devotee only, the rare soul only, who takes spiritual life seriously, who doesn't think that the purpose of life is to earn money and enjoy. Such a rare soul. So most people think, why should I purify myself? And that is answered in the next verse by Bhadrasva. Aho vichitram bhagavad vichestitam. Alas, vichitram, how amazing it is, how wonderful it is, that the foolish materialist does not heed the great danger of impending death. He knows that death will surely come, yet he is nevertheless callous and neglectful. If his father dies, how does he react? He wants to enjoy his father's property. He doesn't think, I'm next. Or if his son dies, he wants to enjoy his son's possessions as well. He doesn't think, I'm next. No one thinks like this, that death is coming. And that we better purify ourselves. In either case, he heedlessly tries to enjoy material happiness with the acquired money. So he's saying, this is so amazing. Oho, vichitram. This is the most amazing thing. But people refuse to notice that death is coming. Prabhupada describes something about the amazing activities of materialists. If you think about it, it is an amazing consciousness. Everyone lives as if they're not going to die ever. Forgetting it, no one thinks of death. And then when a friend dies, they go to the crematorium or the burial ground and get very grave for a few minutes and then forget it. Thus Sukadeva Goswami says, how wonderful of these pastimes of material happiness transacted by the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, materialistic persons want to commit all kinds of sinful activities, but without the sanction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, no one can do anything. Yes? So therefore, the question comes, why does the Supreme Personality of Godhead permit sinful activities? And here is the answer, as Prabhupada explains it. The Supreme Lord does not want any living being to act sinfully, and he begs him through his good conscience to refrain from sin. Don't do it. Don't do that. But when someone insists on acting sinfully, don't say I didn't warn you. The Supreme Lord gives him the sanction to act at his own risk. Matya smittim gyanam apovanam cha.
Okay, but you have to take responsibility for your own actions. Agreed?
No one can do anything without the sanction of the Lord, but he is so kind that when the conditioned soul persists in doing something, the Lord permits the individual soul to ask. Act at his own risk. 4. Bhadrasva prays further. O unborn one, learned Vedic scholars who are advanced in spiritual knowledge certainly know that this material world is perishable. As do other logicians and philosophers, entranced they realize the factual position of this world, and they preach the truth as well. Yet, even they are sometimes bewildered by your illusory energy. This is your own wonderful pastime. Therefore, I can understand that your illusory energy is very wonderful, and I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So see what's being developed. We are in the material world under the control of the Lord's illusory energy. And it is so wonderful that even it has everyone completely bewildered into thinking they're not going to die and acting completely, even though everyone knows it, completely bewildered and thinking they're not going to die. And even more amazing than that is even the great learned Vedic scholars and logicians, kavis, intelligent, realized souls, practically speaking, philosophers, they still sometimes become bewildered, even though they realize it. So how powerful is this amazing illusory energy, Maya? It's very wonderful. But it is your illusory energy. It's under your control. Therefore, I offer my respectful obeisances, Vajrasattva says, unto you, the Lord. Purport. We'll read some of that. A liberated soul is a person who has sufficient knowledge of this material world and is therefore unattached to the bodily conception of life. But because of association with the modes of material nature for a very long time, even liberated souls sometimes become captivated by the illusory energy due to inattentiveness in the transcendental position. Therefore, Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, "Mam eva ye prapadyante mayam etam tarantite." Only those who surrender unto me can overcome the influence of the material energy. Therefore, no one should think of himself as a liberated person, immune to the influence of Maya. Because this Maya is very, very tricky, dangerous, and powerful. And whatever you try to use in Krishna's service, Maya will tend to use that very same thing to trap you. Maya is very, very clever. Everyone should very cautiously execute devotional service by rigidly following regulative principles. Thus he will remain fixed at the lotus feet of the Lord. Otherwise, a little inattention will create havoc. We have already seen an example of this in the case of Maharaj Bharata. Maharaj Bharata was undoubtedly a great devotee, but because he turned his attention slightly towards a small deer, he had to suffer two more births, one as a deer and another as a brahmana, Jadbharat. Afterwards, he was liberated and went back home, back to Godhead. The Lord is always prepared to excuse his devotee. But if a devotee takes advantage of the Lord's leniency and purposefully commits mistakes again and again, the Lord will certainly punish him by letting him fall down into the clutches of the illusory energy. In other words, theoretical knowledge acquired by studying the Vedas is insufficient to protect one from the clutches of Maya. One must strongly adhere to the lotus feet of the Lord in devotional service. Then one's position is secure. Powerful. Important. So this Maya is so wonderful. And that Maya is one of Krishna's energies. But this is not the only wonderful energy of Krishna. Text 5. O Lord, although you are completely detached from the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of this material world, and are not directly affected by these activities, they are all attributed to you. You are the creator, ultimately the maintainer, and the destroyer. We do not wonder at this, for your inconceivable energies perfectly qualify you to be the cause of all causes. You are the active principle in everything, although you are separate from everything. Thus we can realize that everything is happening because of your inconceivable energy. Text 6. At the end of the millennium, ignorance personified assumed the form of a demon. Ignorance personified assumed the form of a demon. stole all the Vedas and took them down to the planet of Rasatala. The Supreme Lord, however, in his form of Hayagriva, retrieved the Vedas and returned them to Lord Brahma when he begged for them. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Lord, whose determination never fails. So the Lord has inconceivable energy, and his determination never fails. And one of those inconceivable energies is Maya, which is so tricky and wonderful, it engages and bewilders everyone in this material world. So for us to get out of the material world, if Krishna becomes determined that we get out, then we are out, practically speaking. So then the question is, how to evoke Krishna's determined desire that we get out of the material world. And Prabhupada would quote his spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in this regard, saying, don't try and see Krishna, but act in such a way that Krishna will see you. That is surrender. Act for Krishna's pleasure. Act in such a way he will notice you and become determined to pluck you out of the material world and place you carefully where? Where you would like to go. So we'll stop here, thank you. So next class will be next Wednesday, probably in the evening, even go back to evenings, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And in the next class we'll hear, we've heard Lord Shiva, we've heard Bhadrasva's prayers to the Lord, and now we'll hear Lord Nisringadev receiving prayers from whom? From whom? Prahlad Maharaj. Very wonderful prayers, very emotive prayers. Very wonderful prayers. And long purports by Prabhupada. So even though there's not that many verses in those prayers, 7 to 14, it will probably take us the class to go through them. Any questions or comments? Yep.
Yes.
Sure, Raman.
There's some Lord Shiva and people like Lord Brahma, are they always glorifying the Lord, or do they sometimes get tangled up in their own affairs and kind of forget a little bit?
Well, Lord Brahma sometimes forgets clearly.
Well, I mean, when he stole the...
Yes, the what?
The whole lot, right?
The whole lot, but there were no gopis in the lot at that particular time. Cowherd boys and the calves.
If she was, for some occasion,
see, their consciousness, it's hard to answer that question, because even when they're not, when they may appear to be forgetting, they're ultimately not forgetting, because they are so powerful and their consciousness is so different from ours that we can't actually comprehend their consciousness. It is so subtle, so different. They exist on a different platform of consciousness. Ours is so gross. Just like a 5-year-old child, if you tell them something and they'll say, is it like this? And actually they can't understand how you're thinking. There's no way they can understand how you're thinking. They just don't have the ability. So in this case, when we try to understand the consciousness of the great controllers, even the great demigods, Indra, Brahma, Lord Shiva, even though they appear to do things that if we were doing them, it would be one thing, it's not the same thing when they do it, because of their subtlety of consciousness. So it doesn't exactly answer your question, maybe, but maybe it approaches it from a different degree. Yes.
This one, because Shiva's in these prayers, I mean, I missed a few classes, but motivate him to go into his deep prayers.
So these in the fourth canto he also prays. And the pachetas see him and he teaches them prayers. But here there's a place in Jambadweep, which is in Bhumandala, which is in the universe. There are 9 different divisions, and one of them is called Ilavritta Varsha. Varsha means divisions. So there are different personalities whose business is to be there and worship deity. So in that particular Ilavritta Varsha, the main person, the leader of all the personalities, heavenly personalities, is Lord Shiva. So exactly what he has to do with the Rudras and the Lord Shiva, whose dance of destruction destroys the world and the one, I'm not exactly sure, but they're all Lord Shiva. Any other? Varaman, did you have
a... My question was, in Lord Shiva's prayers, are the wives of the seventh demon referred to as Kali?
No, I think, if you get me, could you get me a third canto about, that has the, about chapter 5 or 6, or 7, 5, 6, 7, is that there? I think it's not. It's the wives of the serpents, or the daughters of the serpents. They worship Lord Anantadev and they fall in love with him like that. Maybe it's. Maybe it's not. Exactly in that spot. But there's a point where Vidura asks a question, and Maitreya Muni says, I have heard this from my spirit. In answering it, he says, I have heard this from my spiritual master, who originally heard it from Sanat Kumar, who heard it from Anantadev. And in that section, I think it's there, but do you know where that is? Nice to find out. Any other questions, meanwhile? This is it. This is the place. Let's see if it. I think. No, it isn't the place. I'll try to look for that.
Chapter 17, verse 3, which Shiva says. By my own power, I create all kinds of gods.
But that own power is given to him by Krishna.
Usually it's Brahma who creates.
Yeah. Okay. Just as I put the book in away, I have to look to the Sanskrit. What 23 is? Mahan, the total material energy, there was. I create, Shrijay, the material energy, Tamasam, Vaikarikam, the demigod, Svatejasa, by my material strength. And the the birds, the Shakunta, vultures that were bound by ropes. The demigods we create. I don't know what sense, but maybe in the sense of false ego, because he's the predominator of false ego. So all these things come from false ego. False ego in the mode of goodness, passion, ignorance. Maybe in that sense. Did you have a comment on that, Reverend?
Further on in that translation, it says we create Matan and Mala to a world, so that would mean in terms of treatment of it.
Yeah.
As a collective force.
Yeah. Okay, let's stop now. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada.